저는 사실
I think it is not good. It feels like it is to show some kind of political result.
South Koreans react angrily to plans for a joint women's ice hockey team with North Korea at next month's Olympics. It's Friday, January 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington, and you're part of the program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Myanmar is criticized in a new Human Rights Watch report. The U.S. denies any role in the rise of Islamic State in Afghanistan. And Asian manufacturers roll out their new cars at the Detroit Auto Show. That's all on today's VOA Asia. The Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, start 3 weeks from today. Earlier this week, South and North Korea announced plans to have a unified team march in the opening ceremonies and to have a joint women's ice hockey team compete in the Olympic tournament. President Moon Jae-in has said the plan is a good one and could lead to further dialogue, but it has met with some harsh criticism from the South Korean public. As VOA's Brian Padden reports now from Seoul, South Koreans have been generally supportive of North Korea participating in the upcoming Olympics as a way to foster cooperation with its nuclear-armed neighbor, but they are divided over the decision to field a joint women's ice hockey team that critics say places politics over competitive fairness.
According to a recent poll, over 80% of South Koreans welcome the North's decision to send a large delegation to the upcoming 2018 Pyeongchang Olympics in the South. But 70% of the public opposes the formation of a combined North-South team.
I think it is not good. It feels like it is to show some kind of political result.
The decision to add North Korean players to the South's women's hockey team, which has already qualified for the Games, is seen by many as unfair to the players who earn their positions. And the South Korean team hockey coach Sarah Murray earlier voiced concern that it could leave the team at a competitive disadvantage.
And adding somebody in so close to the Olympics, it's a little bit dangerous just for team chemistry because the girls have been together for so long.
But for South Korean President Moon Jae-in, the greater goal for this Olympics is to promote peace and eventually denuclearization with the isolated and repressive Kim Jong-un government.
If the South and North form a united team and participate in the Olympic Games, I think it will become a historic moment. Not only Koreans, but people from all over the world will be moved to see such a historic moment. And it will be a great start to resolve inter-Korean issues.
Though most South Koreans disagree with inserting politics into sports, some say fostering peace would be a better prize than a gold medal.
I think they can sacrifice for a better future. And if we can live in peace with North Korea, there's nothing better than that.
During the opening ceremony, South and North Korean athletes will walk together under a special United Korea flag. North Korea will send a large delegation to the South, including a taekwondo demonstration team, an orchestra to perform, and hundreds of cheerleaders. And skiers from both sides will train at North Korea's Kumgan Mountain Resort prior to the Games. Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
In a survey released Thursday by the South Korean pollster Realmeter, only 4 out of 10 South Koreans said they favored the plan to march together under a flag symbolizing a unified Korea. Tens of thousands of people took to Naver, Twitter, and Facebook to vent their disgust Wednesday night after plans for the joint activities were announced. Others went so far as to complain that the Pyeongchang Olympics have already become the Pyongyang Olympics. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and at the voanews.com website. These are among the top stories trending on voanews.com. U.S. Pacific military chief calls China a disruptive force. China to discuss constitutional amendments, but how far will Xi Jinping go? Australian Prime Minister says Olympic unity won't denuclearize North Korea. U.S. warns Afghans against violence to end rift over ousted governor. And Israeli Prime Minister unveils memorial at Mumbai Jewish Center to terror victims. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Human Rights Watch has released its annual report for 2018, which looks at the state of human rights in more than 90 countries. The organization says events over the past 12 months have shown that political leaders should be more willing to take on what it calls authoritarian populist agendas. As Henry Ridgewell reports from London, Myanmar was strongly criticized for its crackdown on Rohingya Muslims in Rakhine State.
Myanmar is strongly criticized in the report. About 700,000 Rohingya Muslims have fled a violent government crackdown into neighboring Bangladesh.
One of the things that we're calling for in the report is much more concerted pressure to be applied to the Myanmar authorities. So why isn't there a clear call from key governments around the world for the leaders of the Myanmar military, you know, to have targeted sanctions against them?
Human Rights Watch says the clampdown on fundamental freedoms in Russia is at its worst since the end of the Cold War. The report claims that human rights in the United States have come under attack since the election of President Donald Trump.
The attack on the judiciary, the attack on the press, his anti-Muslim ban, the demonization of minorities.
This week, President Donald Trump hosted what he called the Fake News Awards to underline his claim that U.S. media are biased against him. His answer to critics is that he was elected democratically.
No, I'm not a racist. I am the least racist person you have ever interviewed. That I can tell you.
Human Rights Watch says the populist wave that delivered Trump's victory and Britain's vote to leave the European Union ended in France with the victory of Emmanuel Macron in the presidential election.
I think the lesson to draw from that is that actually democratic parties, parties that believe in human rights and fundamental freedoms, should be much more explicit about that, should be standing up for those values.
Human Rights Watch praises the European Union for taking on what it terms authoritarian populist governments in Hungary and Poland, but criticizes the bloc for its response to the crackdown on the media and political opposition in Turkey.
Almost a sort of Faustian pact that's been done. You keep the refugees away and we'll mute and downplay our criticisms about human rights.
President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi of Egypt comes under severe criticism for the repression of civil society groups and a spike in detentions and executions. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari promised improvements to basic rights, but the report says these have yet to materialize. Human Rights Watch does highlight progress in the fight for gender equality, with the January 2017 Women's March in the United States morphing into a global movement. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, at least 52 people have been killed in a fire that broke out on a bus in Kazakhstan's northwestern Aktobe region. Five people were injured. The cause of the fire wasn't immediately clear, but investigators say it may have been triggered by a short circuit. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia on this Friday morning. The United States reiterated Thursday its resolve to help local forces eliminate Islamic State from Afghanistan. It also strongly refuted accusations Washington was behind the emergence of the terrorist group in the war-shattered country. U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan John Bass said that the United States had no role in the emergence of Islamic State, or Daesh in Arabic, in Afghanistan.
Let me take this opportunity, since these rumors continue to circulate, to emphatically state that the United States has not brought Daesh to Afghanistan. The United States has not ever supported Daesh its creation, its horrible attacks in any form or fashion.
The remarks are the first formal reaction to the repeated accusations in recent months by some Afghans, including former President Hamid Karzai, along with Russia, that U.S. troops are aiding Islamic State militants in Afghanistan. In a series of interviews late last year, Karzai called Islamic State a tool of the U.S. The former Afghan president repeated his allegations Thursday in India, saying it was up to the United States to explain the rise of Daesh and extremism in his country. U.S. Ambassador Bass said there was absolutely no way to work out peace or reconciliation with Islamic State in Afghanistan.
The only way to deal with Daesh is through sustained, determined efforts on the battlefield to either kill them or capture them and to remove them, to prevent them from being able to conduct attacks.
Islamic State operates in Afghanistan under the name Khorasan Province. The terrorist group launched its operations in early 2015 from eastern volatile Afghan regions, mainly Nangarhar Province, bordering Pakistan. Since then, the group has extended its activities to other parts of the country. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for some of the recent deadly suicide bombings in Afghanistan, particularly in the capital city, Kabul. The violence has left scores of Afghans dead, mostly members of the minority Shiite community. U.S. military commanders say former members of the Pakistani Taliban comprise a majority of Islamic State fighters in Afghanistan. Pakistan alleges that Islamic State bases in Afghan border areas are also behind terrorist attacks. Afghan officials deny the allegations and say Islamic State militants receive support from Pakistan. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. China's economy surged in 2017, posting a 6.9% increase from the year before, its first annual increase in 7 years. The figures boost the government's decision to turn from wasteful and polluting industries, which had fueled China's rapid rise to become the world's second largest economy. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. It's that time of year, no, not when the world falls in love, but when automobile manufacturers roll out their best and brightest. Earlier this week, the Honda Accord was named Car of the Year at the North American International Auto Show in Detroit. It beat out the Kia Stinger and the Toyota Camry. Asian car manufacturers Toyota, Nissan, and Hyundai rolled out some of their new products this week, with Toyota spotlighting its Avalon sedan with high-tech accessories that help drivers and passengers stay connected. The 2019 Toyota Avalon will be available in 4 trim packages, including XSE, Touring, XLE, and Limited. The car has 2 new powertrains, a 3.5-liter V6 and a 2.5-liter 4-cylinder hybrid system. Jack Hollis, the group vice president of Toyota North America, says it also comes packed with technology.
A 7-inch multi-informational display shows information like turn-by-turn navigation. A 10-inch head-up display, the biggest in the segment, provides info like engine speed and directions and audio settings. There's Qi wireless charging, a Wi-Fi hotspot, 5 USB outlets, and a mobile device holder.
The Avalon also has the Apple CarPlay standard and can connect with a smartwatch or Amazon Alexa-enabled device. Hollis says the system shows Toyota's commitment to accommodating drivers' needs.
Through touch or voice commands, the guests can lock or unlock their doors, or start their engine, or even check their fuel levels securely and safely. And on top of that, we are among the first to actually implement Alexa connectivity with the skills needed to execute from a home to car and car to home commands.
Meanwhile, Nissan showed off its new cross-motion concept car, which Nissan's chief performance officer and North American chairman, Jose Munoz, said demonstrates that company's future design direction.
This dynamic crossover with advanced autonomous drive capabilities represents the start of a new era for Nissan. In fact, it provides a blueprint for what you can expect from our forthcoming CHUV lineup and from future Nissan intelligent mobility-enabled products. These vehicles are the cornerstone of our mid-term plan.
The cross-motion SUV is a three-row, six-seater with seven digital screens in its cabin. Alfonso Albaiza, Senior Vice President for Global Design, says the cross-motion offers a cabin that includes interfaces with technology and will be in the forefront as more and more autonomous vehicles take to the roads.
So our collective shift towards more autonomy, more electrification, and more connectivity guides the shapes of our vehicles. So in designing the cross motion, we wrapped the passenger cocoon with a structural shell. The outer skin was inspired by pewter alloys of Japanese craftsmanship. It's strong and it's elegant, providing a protective armor shell around the passengers.
The vehicle's interior features a wooden center console from front to back and doors that are hinged toward the rear to allow maximum room for rear seat passengers. Albaiza says the cross motion also allows for maximum connectivity between drivers and their data.
You can see how our customers' desire to be connected to their data opens the door to our own form of digital art. The interior space looks like a landscape. The center console symbolizes a wooden bridge connecting two cultures, but also bridging timeless traditions with tomorrow's technology.
Meanwhile, Hyundai introduced new versions of its sporty three-door Veloster. The Korean automaker is introducing the Veloster N, which offers 275 horsepower from a 2-liter four-cylinder engine. The new Veloster also has a completely redesigned interior with a 7-inch color touchscreen display and compatibility with Android Auto and Apple's CarPlay. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump and Senate Democratic leader Charles Schumer have criticized Chinese automaker GAC Automobile's plan to sell vehicles in the United States. Both argued that Chinese automotive trade rules are unfair. The North American International Auto Show continues in Detroit, Michigan through January 28th. This news from VOA Asia. Italian police announced Thursday the dismantling of a Chinese criminal group with the arrest of 30 people operating in the transport sector and present throughout Italy, France, Spain, and Germany. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. About an hour northwest of our headquarters here in Washington, in Frederick, Maryland, Wheeler Stone, who is known as Doc Stone, is living his dream. He's creating leather costumes and accessories for people who love to dress up as fictional characters from the movies. He's also designing and making various leather products for everyday life. As Faiza El Masri tells us, thanks to the Internet, Stone's authentic handmade pieces are finding a growing market. Faith Lapidus narrates.
Doc Stone can spend hours working in his studio without getting tired or bored. To him, leatherworking is more of a hobby than a job. Around 3 years ago, he quit his job as an emergency room nurse to become a maker.
It's a risk, you know, and the biggest thing about life is you can fail doing something that you don't enjoy. So why not risk succeeding at something that you do enjoy?
Becoming a full-time maker gave Stone the chance to express his passion for what's called steampunk.
It is a retro Victorian reality that if you had seen the rise of steam powered and brass and that kind of aesthetic instead of the more industrial, you know, gas powered engine thing. You're tighter on this side than that side, so you can make some slack on that side.
Steampunk performer Inger Talbot dresses as Xena, the fictional character that first appeared in the 1990s on the TV show Xena Warrior Princess.
The chest, shoulder, and back piece are the licensed armor from the show.
Go ahead and pull it all the way out. Perfect.
Artist Stone helps her customize the rest of her costume.
That is actually a sheath for my sword so that I can be walking around and have it on my back as opposed to carrying it around and, you know, possibly impaling people.
Steampunk or contemporary, the process of leather making is basically the same. It starts with putting the design on paper.
But then I take, you know, a piece of paper, cut it out, you know, and pattern it around that and make sure that all the folds work. You know, and then from there you go and you cut leather.
The next step is to dye it. Here, as in every other part of the process, Stone has developed his own style, and he prides himself on being a completely self-taught artist. Then he sews the pieces together and turns the design into a tangible product. He's recently launched an online retail store where he sells various high-end handmade products.
I have a 3D printer. I have a computer. There are leather artists who use lasers to cut out their stuff. So I think if anything, it's about integrating, you know, computers or tools, mm-hmm. you know, and just as the same as my sewing machine. But it would still be me throwing the finishing touches on.
Leather artisan Doc Stone says that's what gives his products a distinctive spirit and personality. And gives him the pleasure he couldn't find at any job other than maker. For writer Faiza El Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And while Doc Stone is making leather, some folks off the coast of Scotland are making stones, specifically the 20-kilogram granite stones used for the Olympic event of curling. As VOA's Arish Arabasadi tells us, a privately owned island off the coast of Scotland is the birthplace to every curling stone to be used at the Winter Games.
Just 16 kilometers off the coast of Scotland is Alysacraig Island. It's home to some world-famous, highly polished stones you likely won't find in a jewelry store. Kay's Curling is the sole manufacturer of curling stones for the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. The company has been around since the 1850s, and Case supplied the stones to the inaugural Winter Olympics in 1924.
The boulders are taken from Alysacraig, as we said. A typical boulder weight is 3 to 5 tons, and we then saw the boulder into slabs. The slabs are the same thickness as the cheeses we want to produce. So the slabs are brought into the factory and then cored to make a cheese.
The cheese is actually a wheel of granite that can weigh upward of 20 kilograms. But it starts by boring through those big granite rocks from Alysacraig Island.
The stone is so special because of its uniqueness. It's Alysacraig granite, both parts of the stone. It's a hybrid stone, the body being Alysacraig common green and the running surfaces being Alysacraig blue hone, are being proven to be the best combination to produce the most consistent performance and the best results on today's high standards of international curling ice.
Those high standards reflect curling's growth as a sport. 25 countries competed in the 98 Winter Olympics. In the 20 years that passed, the number of countries competing grew to 60 and includes newcomers Afghanistan and Mexico.
The sport shows every sign of increasing in popularity globally, which is good for business. It's good for us, but also it's good for the sport.
Granite cheese from a small island off the coast of Scotland now awaits sports immortality in Korea. The Pyeongchang Olympic curling competition starts with mixed doubles on February 8th and runs through February 25th. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And you've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Be sure to check out VOA Asia Facebook. And you can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Keith Holmes, and thank you. I'm David Byrd in Washington.